Brand new edition of the Eagle Sports Zone. We are coming to you live from Kigali, Rwanda, where the 2025 Road World Championships just concluded. First time that the UCI is hosting a world championship in Africa. And it was won by the favorite coming in, none other than Tadej Pogačar, the Slovenian legend. Now of a cyclist, he's a three-time Tour de France winner. He won the road championship last year in Switzerland, successfully defended his title. It was quite a dramatic race. The main challenger, Remco Evenepoel from Belgium, he had a mechanical failure that led to him losing about 30 seconds, but he ended up finishing second. Had he not had that mechanical failure, he more than likely would have, at the very least, had a photo finish with his now rival, Tadej Pogačar. Remco, he won the time trial, in which he's kind of a specialist in. Tadej finished fourth in the time trial. And even after the press conference of that one, Remco said, yeah, it's good to win the time trial, but what I really want is this big one. So he was visibly disappointed, even crossing the line today, shaking his head, because he knows that had he not had that issue with his bike, then it's possible that he would have won the gold medal today. But overall, of the games, Rwanda, Kigali has done a fantastic job in hosting these games. You know, there was some concerns here and there about what Rwanda would do during these games, but they did a fantastic job, truthfully speaking. Major success. I don't think anyone can say there was any hiccups, any bad things that happened during this game. So, yeah, hats off to Kigali. I think they're leading the way in Africa when it comes to hosting international events. I mean, we know what South Africa did in 2010. And I think Rwanda has taken that blueprint to host that event. You know, we've previously spoken on the Eagle Sports Zone before about the level of investment that Rwanda has put into its sports. And it's being here on the ground, it's very, the evidence is here, the proof is in the pudding, that once you invest in sports, you will reap the rewards, as Rwanda is doing now. And so that's all the time I have. And now, before I have to leave you in the hands of a few people that I interviewed here, some Namibians, some other Africans as well, and we'll be in conversation with a media personality here from Rwanda. That's my good friend Elijah, who works for a local media company here, and he gave us his thoughts on Kigali and how they performed, and as well as we'll have the president of the Namibian Cycling Federation, that is Tauko Shilongo, speaking to us, as well as the five riders that represented Namibia at these games. So stay tuned to the Eagle Sports Zone for more content coming to you live from Kigali, Rwanda. Okay, today we are coming to you live from the heart of Kigali. I'm joined by my good friend Elijah Badinyoza, a local media personality here in Rwanda. Elijah, thank you very much for joining us today.
Thank you, my brother. A pleasure to meet you.
Yes, so let's start at the very beginning before we get into our sports discussion. Tell us a bit of background about yourself and how you got to where you are today.
Mm-hmm. All right, thank you. To be where I am here today now, it comes with passion, mm-hmm. You know, because in Rwanda, I don't know if it is in other countries, but in Rwanda, to be a journalist, it first comes with passion, mm-hmm. And then you add education, mm-hmm. to be able at least to give something to the audience. But we normally say that you have to study at least media, of course. Maybe you could call it mass journalism, mass communication, university, mm-hmm. and to be able to, you know, to become a journalist. But in high school, I was a scientist in high school, because I've studied mathematics, biology, and chemistry in high school.
Okay.
But as I felt passionate in media, I've just switched from science to journalism in my university.
Okay.
So I've changed it, and I think I've been doing this for almost 6-7 years mm-hmm. in Rwanda. And when I came to study in university, that's when I started to approach media houses to ask for an internship.
Mm-hmm.
And that internship became my first journey. My first step to come into this journey. And that was in 2019.
Okay.
That was the African Cup of Nations
mm-hmm.
in Cameroon in 2019.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just coming to the media at that period.
Mm-hmm.
And I've started from there, changing different radio stations, of course, where you get a good offer, you go, of course.
Mm-hmm.
So it was from 2019 up to today, 2025. Mm-hmm. It's been almost 6 years doing this. So there should be different struggles, different memories in my journey. As of course, 6 years doing journalism,
yeah,
you could actually meet with different things in media.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but I've been spending almost 6 years in media.
So did you study in Kigali also?
Of course.
Is that which university was it?
At that time, it used to be called Mount Kenya University.
Okay.
Yeah, it's actually a university from Kenya,
mm-hmm.
and it has different branches
mm-hmm.
in Rwanda, Uganda, Tanzania, Ethiopia. Mm-hmm. Different places.
Mm-hmm.
So in Rwanda, they actually had a branch, and I was able to go there to study. My faculty university was called Mass Media and Communication.
Okay.
And we know Kenya, when it comes to education, they're on high level, and especially in media, yeah, they're able to give you something special when you want to know something around related to media.
Mm-hmm.
So I chose to go there, spending my 3 years doing my bachelor's degree. But before finishing my bachelor's degree, like in my second year, that is honest, I came to media, to radio station to ask for an internship.
Mm-hmm.
And I already finished my university while I already became a journalist.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So, and you work for which media company now in Rwanda?
I've worked with different stations, but today I'm on Radio TV 10.
Okay.
It is a big media house because, mm-hmm. You know, There was a public media house called RBA, but last time ago it used to be called Orinfo in French.
Mm-hmm.
But Radio TV 10 is the first private media house that have happened in Rwanda.
Okay.
So it was in 2004.
Mm-hmm.
So it is a big media house. I'm working from there now. But it's not my first time to be there. That is when, by the way, Radio TV 10 is where I've started doing my internship.
Okay.
From there. And I've spent 1 year there, I think, doing my internship.
Mm-hmm.
I've shifted to a new radio house called BNB. Like at that moment, there was a big journalist because I've been working with the big journalists there at Radio TV 10.
Mm-hmm.
And then they chose to create their own media house.
Mm-hmm.
And then they asked me to request to work with them. I accepted, because they spent 2 years, I think, there from 2020 up to 2022.
Mm-hmm.
And then from 2022, I got another offer to go to another radio station called Radio TV 1. I've spent almost 2 years, I think, from 2022 up to 2024.
Mm-hmm.
And then back to 2024, I got another offer
mm-hmm.
to come back to Radio TV 10, with, of course, high salary and things like that. Yeah. So I came back there from 2024
mm-hmm.
up to now.
Okay.
Yeah.
So for the Namibians listening, can you like paint a bit of a picture of the media landscape in Rwanda? Like you said, your station is the first private one, you said, that was started in 2004.
Mm.
Is there many other private ones now, or is it mainly still, you know, largely government dominated? I saw some colleagues from Rwanda Broadcasting Corporation. I think there's another one called Rwanda Broadcasting Agency, maybe?
RBA.
That's also government, right?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, so is it, is the media space, is it largely government, or is there a lot of private institutions also?
Of that?
Mm-hmm.
Most of others are private.
Okay.
Like Radio TV 10 came for the first time, but others, like Radio TV 1, there was other, used to be called Contact FM,
mm-hmm.
Flash FM, but that one, Contact FM, is not working at this moment.
Because
if they have closed already,
mm-hmm.
but City Radio, those are privates.
Mm-hmm.
others, like a part of RRB, others are privates. Even though they could actually have a kind of partnership with government, of course, we are just working for Rwandans. We actually, if we're working from Rwanda, we could actually have a kind of partnership with the country, with the government.
Mm-hmm.
We should actually have different set of partnership,
mm-hmm.
but we are 100% private.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. A part of RRB, others are private.
Okay. Mm. So, give us some insight into how big radio is in Rwanda. You know, the few times I've been walking the streets, I see people listening to radio on their phones.
Mm.
If I walk past a car, it sounds like the radio is always on. So is radio a very big thing in Rwanda?
Of course. When I was studying in university,
mm-hmm.
they used to tell me that media is a kind of another government. Means what?
Mm.
They're able to reach to audience, to citizens,
mm.
A large number of citizens at the same time. Means radio and media houses are highly respected in Rwanda. Because mm. even the government, can you imagine, there's a governmental media house, mm. but when they want to give message to the audience, to citizens, did not only use that governmental media house, they even use private ones,
mm-hmm.
to reach to a large number of people, even though there's government, but others also have big influence.
Mm-hmm.
So media is something big in Rwanda, because they're playing a big role to what the government needs, of course, to share the message.
Mm-hmm.
And when you share the message through the media, it is easy to reach to the audience, because
mm-hmm.
most of the people, not only in Kigali, but even in rural areas of the country. By the way, even in Kigali, most of the guys in Kigali, they actually got information most of the time from the social media.
Okay.
You could say, yes, they're just listening to radios, maybe in their phones, maybe in their cars,
mm-hmm.
but most of the time they got information from social media, because mm-hmm. they are just, you know, they have their own life, how they live with their phones, with the internet, easy to check on their social media every day.
Mm-hmm.
Even the government are just pushing hard to share information on social media, because mm-hmm. they, you know, that's where they're going to get their people, that's where they're going to get their audience, their citizens.
Mm-hmm.
But in rural areas, maybe both of them, they could actually be able to access the internet,
mm-hmm.
but doesn't know how to use it to reach the information, most of them.
Yeah.
So they still take radio as main thing to get information.
Mm-hmm.
And radio or media house, the first thing of media house, I used to study three things that media must do.
Mm-hmm.
The first is to inform.
Mm-hmm.
To educate,
mm-hmm.
and to entertain.
Mm-hmm.
So when it comes to informing, of course, even the listeners, audience, they know how to get informed.
Mm.
And to get information from the rural villages, people, they actually use radio stations than others.
Mm.
Like nowadays in city, in Kigali, they know they're able to access for the information not only on radio, but on social media platforms.
Mm-hmm.
But at the end, after all, radio stations is something big in Rwanda and highly respected.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So you were talking about, you know, the difference between reaching rural people and people, I guess, more in the urban areas. So mm-hmm. is radio like digitally accessible also, or is it just on the traditional frequency?
Oh, nowadays they're just changing to be digital stations, because of course they're just following where the audience are now.
Mm-hmm.
Nowadays, audience are online.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And if you want to do traditional things, you just reach in rural areas people only. But nowadays, to be able to access those from urban, whether in Rwanda or outside the country, because, you know, Rwandans are not only in Rwanda. We used to say, like, Rwandans are like Chinas of Africa. We say Rwandans are Nigerians and Chinese of Africa. Because...
Titanium, the perfect fit between platinum and silver, complementing our existing benefit options. We always offer a comprehensive healthcare experience. NHP, the premier member-centric medical aid fund. Visit NHP today at nhp.com.na. NHP, we're about you.
Nigerians are Nigerians and Chinese of Africa. Because,
yeah.
You know, like we say, Nigerians, I think you cannot be in the country where you cannot see a Nigerian. Yeah,
they're everywhere.
Everywhere. We also say that in Rwanda, because when we came to digitalization of media, And because most of the show we actually do, they're online. They are live on YouTube.
Okay.
Yeah. So we're just doing our shows in radio inside the studio, but of course at the same time being online on YouTube platforms,
yeah,
on live on Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
You get. But when you see how people comment and where they're just commenting from,
mm-hmm,
you can see you're just being followed by different people from around the world.
Mm-hmm.
You get.
Mm-hmm.
So as a country that is actually being quick and fast to be the first in technology, in, development, of course.
Mm-hmm.
Yo, we could not actually be back to not be digitalized.
Mm.
So most of the stations now are online, are digitalized. They use social media platforms and use those information to share information.
Mm-hmm.
Whether what the information from the journalists. How the journalists are just informing, you know, they cut a kind of short video,
mm-hmm,
to post them online,
mm-hmm,
at least to target to those audience from social media platforms.
Yeah.
So we are being very digitalized now.
Mm. Yeah, that's very interesting. So, now moving over to the sport why we are here today, give us, your initial and overall thoughts about Kigali hosting the UCI Road Championships, first time in Africa also that is happening.
You know, let me start in this way.
Mm.
There is something that happens in Kigali. We Kigalians take it as a surprise or a dreams.
Mm-hmm.
Let me say that, because maybe Kigalians or Rwandans doesn't know the level of their government, how they think and what they plan to do. Because to see UCI happening in Kigali, and it's not a private sector that have prepared that,
mm-hmm,
it's actually government 100%.
Mm-hmm.
It shows what the government is just doing for people and what they're targeting for the people you get.
Yeah.
Well, I could be a little surprised,
mm-hmm,
but in this year's from 2020, what is happening here in Rwanda, how we host big things, I think we cannot be surprised to see UCI. Let me say that. Mm-hmm. We are not very surprised to, because let me tell you this. We are in 2025.
Mm-hmm.
We are just hosting UCI.
Mm-hmm.
And in 2024, we were hosting Formula One ceremony of just giving awards to the best Formula One players and participants, mm-hmm, in 2024. You get?
Mm-hmm.
In 2023, Rwanda has hosted Commonwealth Summit,
mm-hmm,
if I'm not wrong, 2023 or 2022, you get?
Mm-hmm.
It was 2023. And other big event, FIFA Congress.
Mm.
You get FIFA Congress?
Yeah.
We've hosted FIFA Congress in Rwanda.
Mm-hmm. So
those are big, like, within 5 years, maybe 4 years.
Also NBA Africa stuff.
NBA became something normal in Rwanda now. Because it's been almost 5 years hosting it here in Rwanda.
Yeah,
so
yeah,
we are not being surprised to host NBA Africa, BAL.
Mm-hmm.
We always host it in Rwanda. It came as if it is something usual in Rwanda.
Mm-hmm.
We could be surprised if we do not host it at all.
Yeah.
Let me say like that.
Yeah.
But to host FIFA Congress, to host Formula One award ceremonies,
mm-hmm,
to host Commonwealth Summit, you get?
Mm-hmm.
Towards UCI, man, like every year we can see that Rwanda is just being on the map.
Yeah,
is being on the platform, on being a big country, especially in hosting at, mm-hmm, all. Because you know, Rwanda is Kigali. I don't know if you've traveled to know Kigali.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a big city at all.
Mm-hmm.
As of course, Rwanda is not a big country.
Yeah,
but we are trying to maximize everything.
Yeah,
and to make Kigali looking better, being developed. Maybe Kigalians are not enough to lift our Kigali to another level.
Okay.
So I think even our government saw that,
mm-hmm,
and that's why they've decided to, you know, to actually attract something from out.
Yeah.
Hosting that kind of stuff, building big hotels,
mm-hmm,
being good in hospitalities,
mm-hmm,
so that we'll be able to, you know, when the outsiders are just coming here, maybe they'll be good. I feel good to be here.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe they should actually choose to be here. Maybe attract others to be here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a kind of business that Rwanda is just doing themselves, mm-hmm, to host events. Because,
mm-hmm,
if we can see that BAL is just being something normal in Rwanda.
Yeah.
And of course, around Africa, they know it's something big.
Yeah.
But if I say Rwandans are just taking it as a big thing nowadays.
Yeah.
That would be true. That would be not true, because it should be.
It's normal now.
Yeah, it's normal now. It used to be big for the first time,
mm-hmm,
but now it became normal. That every day we hosted,
mm-hmm,
every year we hosted.
Mm-hmm.
So to host this kind of stuff. One, it shows the trust that we have in the government is working.
Yeah.
Because they are saying they have to develop our country. Mm. Of course, working with us, partnering with us as a people, as a citizens.
Mm-hmm.
But when you see what they're doing, they're dreaming something big.
Mm-hmm.
You can see they're doing something big, and it shows that when they got opportunity of doing something unusual, something special,
yeah,
they got the opportunity and put in actions.
Mm-hmm.
That's what they're doing now, and we're happy with it.
Yeah.
Mm.
And as you said, not just in Rwanda, and on the whole continent, really, there's now this whole conversation about, using sports to develop countries, to develop economies of certain countries. And like you said, like the convention center that we can see from here, the BK Arena, the stadiums, the hotels, a lot of that is a result of the government's focus on, attracting these international events.
Mm.
But now I want to hear from you as a local, someone from Rwanda that lives in Kigali. Do you feel the effect of this development? Does this really come down to you, or is it really only for the internationals, the tourists? Do you feel proud, or do you feel any effect of all these nice things coming to Rwanda? Does it reach the people? Is what I'm asking.
I got your question, but let me ask you. Let me answer you with my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
Do we people need to wait for the government to give us something, to give us food, to give us what? Like, there's a kind of slogan, let me call it slogan, that we got from the government, which says, we need to find solutions within ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
We need to find solutions from ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
What the government's doing is to create opportunities, and then we actually get benefits from those opportunities again.
Okay.
We need to create our own life. We need to create something for our own. We think and create something for our own. You get?
Mm-hmm.
As long as you're able to think, as long as you're able to see all the opportunities around, you need to think how you can just benefit from those opportunities around.
Yeah.
Because let me say this. You cannot be rich, you cannot change your life 100% or change your life on higher level while you are working from others.
Mm-hmm.
You know that.
Yeah.
And our mindsets now, that's my opinion,
mm-hmm.
we're not just thinking to work for others for a long time,
mm-hmm.
but even though we don't have a kind of jobs to do to earn money to get our life, but we have to use our minds to think what we can do.
Mm-hmm.
Not do for others, but do for ourselves to get money, to earn money, you get?
Yeah.
And it's a kind of mindset that government have tried to put in us. Because if you see that the government have chosen to, to create something internationally, at least to earn money, it means that in a country, inside a country, there are not a lot of opportunities. There are not a lot of life.
Mm.
Even the government itself is like they're not being satisfied or being able to handle all the situations within the country.
Mm-hmm.
They're just looking out. Means we have some few opportunities in Rwanda, and if they go out to bring those stuff, events, stuff like that, we could actually get those opportunities to see. Okay, the thing, big events, big stuff are just coming to be hosted in Rwanda.
Mm-hmm.
What can we do?
Yeah.
What can we do to show and do to get to earn some money?
Mm-hmm.
Rwanda is not a country with the let me say we don't have golds, we don't have diamonds,
mm-hmm.
we don't have petrol. We are an rocket country. You get
mm-hmm.
means opportunities must be few. You get.
Mm-hmm.
And all the economy, all the thing that we have to do, like, we Rwandans, we people, are the ones to think and create what we have to do.
Yeah.
You get? And choosing to, to host international events, of course, it cannot be benefits for the government while not benefit to people. Because a lot of, especially youth people, got jobs down there, they earn some money, of course.
Yeah.
That's the best opportunity. And other businesses that are working from Rwanda, they got other opportunities to earn money, hotels, those working from hospitalities, businesses in Rwanda.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, they have to get some money, as long as outsiders, foreigners, are just coming here in Rwanda.
Yeah.
So I think that would be another big opportunity that Rwandans should actually benefit from hosting those international events.
Mm-hmm.
But also other big opportunity, like as I said before, how when I see you as you to come from Namibia to come to Rwanda, of course, to know you, that should be a benefit to both sides, me and you, of course.
Yeah, yeah.
And if I am, if it's an opportunity that I got from the country to host something like this and bring people from out, like how I met you, and then why can I not talk to you and see what is in Namibia, and I tell you what you have in Rwanda, you get? And then maybe you could tell me something from Namibia. Maybe I could get interested to know something new. I will come to learn, then come back here, put in actions. So it's a kind of benefit that I'm looking forward to host those international events in Rwanda.
Yeah, and that's a very interesting outlook. Because in Namibia, you know, there's a lot of... It's a bit opposite from the people where they say, they're more like, what is the government doing for us kind of thing. And so to hear you saying like, you know, it's actually, we must create our own opportunities. It's a good thing to hear from you.
My brother. Like, it's, let me say this. We actually call it a fake mindset.
Yeah.
When we say government, what do we mean? Government is not the ones who are in office. Government is us, because we are the ones who elect them. We are the ones who put them in office. Of course, we elect them. Okay, we vote them. They got elected. They go into office. They're working for people. Okay, but if they are there to make their job easy, it will first come start with us. What we are doing, what they are going to present.
Yeah.
The leaders are not going to come and then give you food at home.
Yeah.
The leaders are not going come and then say, oh, come and do this job.
Yeah.
You get?
Yeah.
We put them to direct us, to drive us. Okay. But we are the ones to take actions. We are the ones to take decisions and then take our thoughts, our ideas, present there to them. Showing what we're just planning to do, and they will show us the election. They will make it easy to reach to what we're just going to achieve. But waiting for the government to do something for you, as long as you have life, as long as you, you know, well, if you're young, if you're a kid, understandable. But you're a man, if you're a woman, big man, do you think you still need to wait for the government to give you something?
Yeah.
I don't think so.
Yeah,
I don't think so. Yeah.
Yeah, no, I agree.
Yeah, sure.
So, now talking about, transitioning to Rwandan sports, you know, give us a oversight of what, like local Rwandan sports, what is that like here? What is the biggest sport here? What do people enjoy the most? Yeah. And what is the most participated in sport in Rwanda?
Oh, I could actually, I'll talk to maybe three sports, but they're different, and I will tell you how different it is. Most of Rwandans love football. It's a biggest sports in the world.
Yeah,
Rwandans love football a lot, and even we from media, that is what we sell than anything else. I can even tell you that, like, if we're talking about cycling, we're just talking about it because we are just hosting UCI.
Yeah.
I can even tell you that before 2 months of UCI to be hosted in Rwanda, no media house
was covering cycling.
Was that not covering, even to talk about cycling?
Yeah.
Because we are just talking to what we are just wanting to sell, what people are just consuming. They're just consuming football.
Is that local football or international?
Both.
Yeah.
Because like on my radio station, be like within the our session starts the programs from 6 a.m. and finish by 3 p.m.
Okay, just sports.
I want to tell you that how we start our programs and how we end our programs.
Okay.
But within those hours of programs, we take at least 7 hours talking about sports. Can you imagine? Means we're just selling sports than other stuffs in Rwanda.
Yeah.
Especially in media.
Yeah.
Means Rwandans love sports and other things. That means, that what means. And within those 7 years, 7 hours, 4 hours, four and four something, we talk about local football.
Okay.
And then other 3 hours, we talk about international football, European football,
mm-hmm.
Mostly European football.
Mm.
And that's the biggest sports that we have in Rwanda. Even though our clubs in Rwanda are not the biggest in Africa, but when you see how Rwandans love their staffs, their clubs,
mm.
it's something unusual. They're very passionate about football,
yeah.
for real.
Yeah.
So that is the first, how passionate people are to football.
Mm-hmm.
Second, I'll go with basketball, and I'll give you a reason why.
Okay.
You know, basketball, as you said, we've been hosting BAL
mm-hmm.
For almost 5 years. But it's something I've been pushed by the government. Let me say that.
Mm.
Basketball, I've been pushed by the government because First Family are very basketball fans.
Okay.
Very basketball fans.
Yeah.
Even those sons of the president, some of the time we see their pictures going to watch NBA from USA.
Yeah.
Means they're very passionate, they love basketball.
Okay.
So, of course, as a First Family, if they love the game, they should have been pushing it to a higher level.
Mm-hmm.
So, basketball is being another big event, and how, like, I can even tell you, when you see an infrastructure like a BK Arena,
mm-hmm.
can you believe that people go to watch basketball in BK Arena while there doesn't even, most of them, there doesn't know the players are going to play?
Really? They just know a game is happening there.
Yeah, and they will go to enjoy the moments, they go to enjoy the infrastructure.
Mm.
Okay. Because mm-hmm. when you are there, there are DJs, there are music, of course. But to be in that kind of infrastructure, that kind of big house, that would be a good moment for you.
Mm-hmm.
And then, like, to approach people, to attract people in that way, of course, day by day, slowly by slowly, they are being interested and love basketball every day.
Mm-hmm.
So now, basketball is something that's very developing in Rwanda.
Mm-hmm.
And I can even say that we have a very big team in basketball, maybe APL, a basketball club.
Mm-hmm.
They're just playing, they were in South Africa to play these games of BAL.
Mm-hmm.
Like our club, APR basketball club, is one of maybe 7-8 biggest basketball clubs in Maine. Africa.
Okay. Yeah.
So a part of that, there's basketball. Of course, there's a First Family game. It is being pushed to high level and it's a good game. People mm-hmm. are just being interested with it.
Mm-hmm.
And third is just cycling.
Mm-hmm.
Cycling, you know, there was a level of cycling, actually. Mm-hmm. There was a, like, when we start to do cycling in Rwanda, doing what is called to di Rwanda,
mm-hmm.
to travel around the country, it was like, we actually on the level of, it is called 2.2. In cycling, I don't know if you know, but it was just 2.2.
Mm-hmm.
But when we were just developing and then putting to higher level, to higher standard, we got a kind of degree, a kind of grade.
Okay.
To put it to 2.1.
Yeah.
And putting to 2.1, it is a kind of points or marks that government have been presenting to ask for hosting
mm-hmm.
UCI.
Mm-hmm.
So, cycling is a game the runners are very interested to watch because
mm-hmm.
all of them, they pay nothing to watch. As long as it's free to go to the roads, watching, cycling, just doing stuff, people go to watch.
Mm-hmm.
So those are three main sports in the country, football, basketball, and cycling.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, you know, hearing you speak, what I'm curious about is, you know, we can say maybe about 10 years ago is when, you can correct me if I'm wrong, is when the Rwandan government like really made this push for increasing sports development, right? Mm. Is it about 10 years?
Yeah.
Maybe a bit earlier?
I could say 10 years, but even fewer than that. Because
mm-hmm.
I used to hear to the president last mm-hmm. time, I think that was when he was changing the government
mm-hmm.
and putting a new minister of sports in office,
mm-hmm.
the current minister of sports.
Miss Nelly?
Nelly Mkazaye, mm-hmm. you know her, yeah.
Yeah.
Our president said that sports is business.
Mm.
And we are targeting to do a very good business
mm-hmm.
in sports.
Mm-hmm.
You know what that means? As long as we don't have a big athletes and we don't have a very big clubs to present the country, we should actually have to do business in sports in other way.
Mm.
So another way of doing business in sports now is to host all sports events.
Mm.
Like, when you hear president saying love,
mm-hmm.
why you know you have big athletes, you have big clubs to present the country to the business in sports, of course, is to host.
Yeah,
that's why we have Amaro Stadium, the biggest stadium. I think maybe you know Amaro Stadium, right?
Yeah, it's next to BK.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
There's Amaro Stadium. There's BK Arena.
Yeah.
There's a thing called Zaria Court. Zaria Court. I don't know if you know.
Yeah, so that's
it. It's around the Amaro Stadium, of course.
Mm-hmm.
Like you pass to Zaria Court to go to Amaro Stadium to go to BK Arena.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
But that Zaria Court, it is. I kind of it's an infrastructure that makes sports and entertainment.
Mm.
That should be a sport like basketball to be played inside.
Mm-hmm.
There should be a music shows,
mm-hmm.
music events. Okay, but as of now, sports in Rwanda, the government are taking it as a business to host sports than athletes to act.
Yeah, so that was actually going to be my question. Is like, so since there's been this push for sports development, why do we not see more like Rwandan talent coming from the country? Like, why don't we see your national basketball teams performing, your national football teams, or maybe even athletics athletes? But so you're saying actually the government decided, instead of doing that, let's just focus on the pure business side, the international side. So That's something I didn't think about, because in Namibia also our government is talking a lot about, you know, sports as a business.
Yeah, but talking about it.
Yeah, but a lot of people are seeing it more like to develop Namibian talent.
That's what they think.
Instead of
hosting.
Instead of hosting per se. So I think it's an interesting dynamic. So do you think they should be now focused to develop actual Rwandan sports? So, you know, people like we see down here, there's kids playing. Can these kids one day become professional footballers in Rwanda, or should they more be focused on the, you know, maybe deciding to work in, I don't know, sports marketing or something?
Well,
instead of the sport itself.
When it comes to develop sports through in detecting talents,
mm-hmm.
man, like I'm a sports journalist, and I've been spending my 6 years, of course, knowing what is going on in the country.
Mm-hmm.
But when it comes to detect talents in Rwanda,
mm-hmm.
we have failed 100%.
Yeah, failed, you say?
Yeah, failed.
Yeah.
And when you're just getting to know the reason of get failed, it's not because we don't have a talent,
mm-hmm.
not really. We have, we can see people around.
Yeah.
We have a tall guys. Even me. You're talking to, I am tall.
Yeah.
I am tall. I can play basketball. I can play other volleyball again. And in football, can you imagine if you have a neighbors of DRC,
mm-hmm.
they're good in sports, mm-hmm. in football again.
Mm-hmm.
What Uganda is doing today,
mm-hmm.
they're our neighbors. They're good in football.
Kenya. Mm.
Tanzania is doing something unusual.
Mm.
Via their clubs, Simba and Yanga, I think in all the clubs,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
they're doing something unusual.
Yeah.
So why other countries around us are just something and are just building something unusual,
mm-hmm.
in football, but not us?
Yeah.
Are they talented than us?
Mm-hmm.
I don't think so. But how they get detected, mm-hmm. how they detect their talents?
Mm-hmm.
And to detect the talents, it is something maybe looking expensive, because you cannot see the results,
mm-hmm.
In front of you,
mm-hmm.
for the young kid who's playing, trying to play football.
Mm.
9 years, 10 years, 11 years players, you cannot see them playing. Like when they're 11 or 12, not easy to see them on their 25.
Yeah.
And to see that at their 25, they'll be on higher level.
Mm-hmm.
That'll be something not easy. And like to believe and choose to invest in athletes,
mm-hmm.
we are failed with that, and that affected athletes to do not play on high level. I will actually give you an example when I come to my second idea or opinion.
Yeah.
Administration in sports, and I'm sorry, mm-hmm. but I will talk about football.
Yeah, please.
Administration, how our football is being driven.
Mm-hmm.
It's for interest of a certain individuals.
Mm.
Let me say that.
That seems to be a continental problem. It's because it's maybe the same in Namibia. Yeah,
maybe continental, but mm-hmm. it's interest of certain individuals,
mm-hmm.
and they have power.
Mm-hmm.
that when you are complaining, you can change nothing. Means they're not interested in developing talents, detecting talents, investing talents to get developed. And they're just looking for themselves. You get? And that, if it is just happening like that, of course, that will kill development of talents in Rwanda. And those guys who are saying that, who are doing that, they're big fishes. They're superpower people.
Yeah.
Even me, like, you are international journalists.
Yeah.
You're from Namibia. But I cannot mention even one name. I cannot.
Yeah.
I don't know, like, how this will impact, but I don't need to mention anything.
Yeah.
Even in how we do that in Rwanda. How we do critics in our sports shows, most of the time we do not mention names, but we know when we are free, like, you know, when we are free to talk to anything as if we have anything to lose, we could mention the names.
Yeah.
I say this guy and this guy, they're killing our game. If they live in the offices, and they live here, something will change.
Yeah. So sorry to cut you. So even though you are private media, you are not really allowed to publicly criticize the public officials.
And during to how we run it all, that is good, because if you are allowed to say everything you want, we cannot be driven, because we know how runners are. Runners are not easy. Let me say that.
Yeah.
Runners are what they think, how close the mind they are. If you drive them in the way they want, let me say like this, if you give them 100% freedom, you could reach to nothing.
Really?
Because they could destroy everything at all.
Yeah.
And that is why I support doing it in this way. And when people are just doing it, like, because it's not in every department or every sector that you could see people doing something like that. It's not it's only in football. But other sectors, of course, tourism, hospitality, of course, other businesses, they're just developing a part of football. Others have been developed a part of football. And if you are if you are allow Rwandans to talk what they want in football, maybe they could change something, but it is all about to let Rwandans being free to talk what they want.
Yeah.
And if you allow them to talk what they want, bro, you could reach to nothing. You could destroy everything. Even, man, we are jealousy people. Let me say that.
Yeah.
Very, very jealous people. Let me say, I'm Rwandan.
Yeah.
I know them and I'm saying the truth.
Yeah.
We are not happy to see our colleague being developed to higher level. I'm sorry, but we are jealousy people at all. So you could be in a position, being a good guy in a position, but because I felt just to you, that's an example, I could find something to destroy you.
Yeah.
So means if you are there and in Rwandans, you need to have strong power.
Yeah.
And that's why when people are saying that we have a president who just in the country for a long time, we know the Rwandans. Give them 100% freedom and so it happens.
Really?
That's the truth.
Yeah, no, that's interesting to hear.
It's the truth.
Yeah.
Yeah, man.
Yeah, nice. I mean, the whole thing of not wanting to see your colleague, I think also that is a continental thing also.
Is that also continental?
Yeah, definitely.
Something not good, man. Something not good, bro.
Yeah.
Because that's why, like, you know, let me share with you my personal decisions. Can you believe that I don't have a lot of friends, but I have the people that we know each other. Because I count you as my friend. Well, you know at least where I live. You came to invite me. That's when I count you as my friend. And you know what? I don't have many people come to meet me at my home. Not really. You know why? When you come to see where I live, what you are going to talk out, will destroy me. So I do not allow you to come into my life and then be able to know where I live.
Yeah.
And if you allow me to come to know.
Shopping Cash, here's what you can get for less than 20 Namibian dollars at USAID. 750 milliliters Polygrid dishwashing liquid, 14.99 Namibian dollars. 500 grams Romy 37% fat spread, 14.99 Namibian dollars. 200 grams Champion liver spread, 19.99 Namibian dollars. 100 milliliters Aquafresh toothpaste, 19.99 Namibian dollars. And a packet of Tiffany cream biscuits for just 6.99 Namibian dollars. You save your low budget grocery store with good food, cost less.
And then be able to know where I live.
Yeah.
And if you allow me to come to know where I live, at that that moment I could know that you at least you are good to me.
Mm.
Yeah, man.
Mm. Mm. Yeah, no, that's it's an interesting thing of life that happens.
Mm.
So Elijah, the last thing I want to ask you about is you know, in school, I learned this one saying a teacher told us once in class that sport is a reflection of society. Basically meaning that the things that we see in society, whether it's corruption, whether it's even on the positive side, you know, just anything, those are the things that we end up seeing in sport as well. You know, like basically saying that there's nothing that happens in sport that only happens in sport. For example, if there's racist incidents in sports, it's because you have racism in your overall society. So when you hear that quote, that sport is a reflection of society, can you describe it in a Rwandan context, how Rwandan society is reflected in the sport? I mean, you touched on it a little bit with the football, but, you know, just a overall picture of that.
Well, in general,
mm-hmm.
There's this thing called sports. When you say sports, you say a lot of things. There are even sports for those rich people who are there to enjoy.
Mm.
There's a sports for those who are looking for money, for looking for life.
Mm-hmm.
But let's talk about the sports for those people who are looking for life.
Mm-hmm.
Most of those sports are dirty games. Mm-hmm. Not only in Rwanda, but around the world.
Mm-hmm.
We see what happens to people who used to lead FIFA.
Mm-hmm.
A French guy was called, he used to lead UEFA. Michel Platini. Do you know that guy?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And you know what happened to him?
Mm-hmm.
He got poisoned due to they said he used to receive the corruption. So that, the corruptions, he was corrupted.
Mm-hmm.
Even in FIFA, the guy who used to read FIFA before Sebratel, before Infantino,
mm-hmm.
They were both in prison. They went in prison for the kind of corruptions. Mm-hmm. Means what? Football is a dirty game.
Yeah.
Most of those sports who have played by those people from scratch.
Yeah.
Most of those sports are dirty games.
Yeah.
It is something global.
Mm.
Let me say it like that.
Mm.
And we humans around the world, if I say we are it is as if we are not good indeed. Like when you see how we act to others. Nowadays, 2025, there are a lot of wars around the world.
Mm-hmm.
Not only in Africa, there are a lot of wars.
Mm-hmm.
Near Asia, a lot of wars. I'm just meaning to those from Israel, Pakistan, Yemen, those stuff like that.
Yeah.
There is another wars in Europe, of course, Ukraine, Russia, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
So it means like it is something easy for people to, you know, to do not love each other, to do not wish something good to each other,
mm-hmm.
to choose to give peace to others, to reach to the level that we can just choose to kill each other to look for a peace. Mm-hmm. That's how it is. People will kill each other to look for a peace. So if it is on high that level, so that people could actually choose to kill to look for a peace, means we humans are not good. That's how it is.
Mm-hmm.
And what happens in football or in sports in general, of course, it reflects the image of the society.
Mm-hmm.
And we, our society, when it comes to football, when it comes to sports, I think we reflect something in you.
Yeah. Yeah.
Why? Oh, you could see us on the roads watching the cyclists. You get?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe you could see us maybe smiling, shining, celebrating the games, enjoying the games, okay? Yeah. but it doesn't mean we're always maybe enjoying the life.
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah.
But I see sports as something that could be, make people being a little busy,
mm-hmm.
a little busy, and then life moves on.
Yeah. Like a small distraction from life.
But in general, maybe I could say even sport, even though sports reflects how people lives in their life,
mm-hmm.
but it also hides something.
Mm.
It also hides maybe something emotional.
Mm-hmm.
We go there to enjoy. We do not go there to feel not good. We go there to be busy looking, watching some stuffs,
mm-hmm.
to enjoy, to, you know, to spend our time there, at least being emotionally good, okay?
Mm-hmm.
But in general, when you say sports, it's just kind of reflecting how people live, their society's life. Maybe I could look at that angle in economical way.
Yeah.
Let me say that. Like reflection of sports in society. Maybe economically, I could just see how people live. Because as I said before,
mm-hmm.
people are just paying nothing to come to watch the,
cycling. Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
But if you put the game in the stadium, maybe Amaro Stadium,
mm-hmm.
Amaro has 45,000 seats.
Mm-hmm.
And if you put the game there and say you need to pay maybe $5, let me say that,
mm-hmm.
to come and watch the game, you cannot even have 10,000.
Really?
Yeah, for real.
So when they have games in there, are they always free to fill the stadium?
For the first time, it used to be free.
Mm-hmm.
But like when they're just opening Amaro Stadium, it used to be free, forced out to do protocols.
Mm.
But day by day, it's not free, but at least you need to minimize the price.
Yeah, yeah.
To reach to under $1. When I say 1K Rand francs,
yeah,
it's a kind of $0.78.
So let's say Kenya is coming to play.
Mm.
In the stadium, mm-hmm. friendly against Rwanda.
Mm.
What is a normal ticket price to get in Rwandan franc?
1K.
1K? But then the stadium is full?
I cannot be full.
No?
The stadium got full for the tickets once. And that was a game against, like, you saw this club called Rayon Sport.
Mm-hmm.
Is a biggest supported club in Rwanda.
Mm-hmm.
A biggest supported club in Rwanda.
Mm-hmm.
There was a game against Rayon Sport and APR, and APR is another big club in Rwanda.
Mm-hmm.
And at that time, it was going to be the first game to be played in Amaro Stadium with those clubs,
yeah.
at the biggest clubs in Rwanda.
Yeah.
And Rayon Sport makes sure that they're going to sell and do sold out. Man, they did everything possible. They did very big PR. They did media tours to advertise that game.
Mm-hmm.
And at that time, the lowest ticket was 2K.
2K was the lowest?
Yeah. 2K or 3K,
uh-huh.
if I'm not wrong.
Uh-huh.
Man, they got sold out, and it was something historical.
Yeah.
Because from that game, there was not sold out again.
Never again?
Never.
This was what year?
Even today. Eh?
This was what year?
Maybe last 2 years.
Okay.
Yeah, last two years. Yeah, last 2 years.
Yeah, no, that's interesting.
It's between 1.5 and 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
Mm.
Yeah, no, that's interesting because, you know, that's kind of what I was alluding to earlier when I was asking about the local sports. You know, we have these nice facilities like the stadium you're talking about, but we can't fill it with our own people, basically.
So the other thing, the government have built a big stadium like that to host local stuff.
I mean, not only local stuff, but...
As I said,
but I'm saying
we are
also
doing business in sports.
Yeah,
they're targeting something big.
Yeah.
Well, as a journalist, let me share with you something. Maybe it could be new to you.
Uh-huh. It's,
do not be surprised when you see something called Super Cup in Africa to be hosted in Amaro Stadium.
Uh-huh.
Don't be surprised. You know, there was this football competition for the legends.
Mm-hmm.
It was called FIFA World Cup Legends. FIFA Legends World Cup.
Mm-hmm.
It was going to take place in Amaro Stadium.
Mm-hmm.
And that time, we actually had a, maybe I can call him a scammer. It was a Cameroonian guy,
yeah.
who were just preparing for that,
yeah.
inviting big players, Ronaldinho could come, Samuel could be here, those big players, Thierry Henry could be here. But like that is his proposal, he said. I'm just going to invite big players and they're just going to come, okay? And the Amahoro Stadium was there to host them, and Rwandans were able to, we were able to welcome them, of course. But the guy failed to invite big players. I think at that time, the guy who accepted to come was Ronaldinho. And the Jojo coach, I think. You know the Jojo coach?
Yeah, of course.
Those only two.
Yeah.
But he was proposing to say Eto will come, Thierry Henry will come, who's even David Bikamu should come.
Yeah.
But he failed to invite all of them.
Yeah.
And you know, the events, like before one month or something, some weeks before events, like 2 weeks before events, the confirmed superstars were only two, Okocha and Ronaldinho.
Yeah.
You know what happened? Already are the ones who actually do partners with those staff to come to Rwanda.
Yeah,
they've cancelled it.
Okay,
because there was no big impact. If only Dinho and the Okocha, there was no big impact. Means what? Amahoro Stadium has built for attracting something big.
For big stars.
Yeah, maybe we could actually benefit of having it, and then we do match. We play local games down there. But not every game. But the target is just hosting those big games, Super Cups. Most of those big players are coming to play here. Yeah, something. Because even to rent for that big Amahoro Stadium, in Rwandan franc, it's 20 million Rwandan francs.
Really?
Yeah.
That's and for like a few hours.
When you put it in dollars, it is actually more than $15,000 to rent it for one day.
One day.
So means not every club can just rent it while you're not able to generate that kind of
to make the money back.
Not every club, not every game can be played from there. Yeah.
Nice. Interesting. It's interesting.
Yeah, no.
Okay. You know, before I take up too much of your time, the final question I have is about you know, when I was doing research for the UCI before I came. Some of the European media, you know, they, of course, had, some negative things to say, you know, talking about the whole, conflict with Congo thing. Some people were concerned about their safety and things like that. So, as a Rwandan yourself, as a local, that conflict at the border, how does it, one, what is your view on it? And two, how does it, affect life, I guess, here in, I mean, we're not at the border, but in Kigali itself, how does that impact your life, if at all?
Let me say, well, when it comes to this kind of conflicts, it has a roots from a history, and you used to be there as a problem for almost 30 years. But before 30 years, like, there was another problems in Eastern Congo. And as I said, it has a roots from history. It is all started with the colonies. You know why? We Rwandans, we speak in Rwanda as our official local language.
Yeah.
But we have other people who lives near the country, not inside, but outside the country, but near, who also speaks Kinyarwanda as their local language. You know why? Those places near the country, Eastern Congo, south of Uganda, west of Tanzania, used to be part of Rwanda before colonials.
Okay.
Used to be part of Rwanda, but you know, this thing called Berlin, I don't know if you know in the history, but there was a meeting called the Berlin Congress, let me say that, in Europe. It was a meeting in Germany last time ago, like in history. That is when they decided to divide the country.
Okay, yeah.
And dividing the country, I want to explain that kind of conflict from roots. Allow me to say that. Maybe you could actually get your own image.
Yeah.
When they divide the country, they actually divide the people into two countries. Those, like, you, let me use an example. Maybe I'll explain it to you.
Mm-hmm.
You can see this place. Mm-hmm. Okay. Maybe this used to be Rwanda. Okay.
Yeah.
And then in that meeting, they've cut one of the parts of the country.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And Rwanda remain like this.
Yeah.
And those people from here are not Rwandans at that moment.
Mm-hmm.
While they speak in Rwanda,
mm-hmm.
they behave like Rwandans.
Yeah.
They have the same culture like Rwandans.
Yeah.
You get?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then they used to live in those places.
Mm-hmm.
And if you say those people who used to be Rwandans are now becoming a Congolese,
mm-hmm.
those are now becoming Ugandans,
mm-hmm.
and are becoming Tanzanians.
Yeah.
Of course, the government must actually accept that.
Yeah.
I mean, the government for those countries.
Those countries.
Yes, that happened.
Mm-hmm.
And that was good to them, no problem.
Mm-hmm.
As long as they got another land to be added to their country.
Mm-hmm.
And in 1994, in genocide against the Tutsi in Rwanda,
mm-hmm.
I don't know, maybe, do you know the history of genocide against the Tutsi?
A little bit, yeah.
Yeah, all right. Mm-hmm. But it was this, a genocide targeting the Tutsi in Rwanda.
Mm-hmm.
And, after all, genocide have stopped. And those who were targeting Tutsis,
mm-hmm.
Went abroad, went out of the country. Most of them went to Congo.
Okay.
Okay. Mm-hmm. In Eastern Congo, of course.
Mm-hmm.
And to go to Eastern Congo, there were also, they actually had an ideology of hating Tutsis.
Okay. Okay. The Eastern Congolese.
Normally, they actually had an ideology of hating Tutsis, and that's why they have prepared a genocide against them to kill them, because
mm-hmm.
they were targeting to kill everyone who mm-hmm. called a Tutsi.
Mm-hmm.
To the level that they could actually kill even the baby under the bed of his mom. As long as husband is a Tutsi,
mm-hmm.
even the baby inside the berry is also a Tutsi.
Mm-hmm.
So he must be killed. That was the ideas, just to kill every Tutsi around so that maybe Tutsi could be forgotten.
Yeah.
So did happen to how they wanted,
mm-hmm.
but Tutsis were around the country, but people who used to live in Eastern Congo before the divide, they were also Tutsis.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah.
And when the soldiers, those who were killing, when they went to Congo, when the government, when RPF took the place mm. in Rwanda, mm. those people went there, of course, they went with that ideology. And they got received and welcomed by the government of Congo. It used to be led by, the president used to be called Mobutu Sese Seko, was a banger.
Mm.
He was a good friend with the President Habyarimana, who used to lead Rwanda. He was a good friend of him at all.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And of course, Mobutu, who used to lead Congo, was not actually happy to see his son, his friend, got killed, because he got killed, of course.
Mm-hmm.
Not killed by the RPF,
mm-hmm.
but when you follow how it happened, his airplane got, they actually, they gunned it.
Yeah.
Before, there was a meeting in Tanzania in Arusha, and the President Habyarimana came to Rwanda with his plane,
mm-hmm.
and they fired him in plane.
Mm-hmm.
You know why? They fired their soldiers. Chose to fire him because
mm-hmm.
he was just actually accepting to mix here the government and the leadership
mm-hmm.
with those from RPF who wanted to come. You get?
Mm-hmm.
So if he accepted, the guys from inside the country at that time, they were not happy with it, and they chose to do what? To fire him.
Mm-hmm.
You okay?
Mm-hmm.
So to kill him, they used it, they killed him and started to kill Tutsis at that time, because that was their target since long time ago.
Mm-hmm.
You get?
Mm-hmm.
And then the government came to support, the RPF came to support, came to fight with those who were killing, stopping genocide, but also fighting with the world, with those soldiers of the country at that time.
Yeah.
Of course, RPF won them,
mm-hmm.
stopped genocide,
mm-hmm.
and the losers, of course, went in Congo as the country who used to be a friend
mm-hmm.
with the ex-president of Rwanda.
Mm-hmm.
You get? And when they reached this country, of course, he got a good welcome,
mm-hmm.
and they started to put hate and teach ideology in Congolese
mm-hmm.
on how Tutsis are not good,
mm-hmm.
so that they could not actually live peacefully with those two thieves.
Yeah.
Before being there, before those losers, soldiers,
yeah.
before they go to Congo,
yeah.
Tutsis from there used to be peaceful.
Yeah.
There was no problem inside.
Uh-huh.
So they actually went there, started to share the ideologies of how Tutsis are not good people, you get?
Uh-huh.
So that is when the conflict started.
Hmm? Mm.
There are Tutsis from Congo called Banyamulenge.
Yeah.
They started to leave their cows.
Mm-hmm.
Most of them went to Burundi. Mm-hmm. Others came to Rwanda. Mm-hmm. Others came to Uganda.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
They started to leave their tribes because those who used to be in the government of Rwanda and the others who, they're called Hutus. Those Hutus who used to want to kill the Tutsis, doesn't want to live with the Tutsis, they came, government supported them. You know what happened? It's actually a kind of long history, but they went as soldiers and as people who were killing. There was not only soldiers. There was not only soldiers who were killing Tutsis, even people who were just being supported by the government. All went to Congo, start to kill those two Tutsis from there.
Mm-hmm.
You know what happened? The government, those who took place in Rwanda, wanted to bring those people back in the country.
Mm-hmm.
Whether those who did those stuffs to get penalized, to get fined,
mm-hmm.
whether those who are innocent, but when they're in Congo,
mm-hmm.
even their camps were near the border of Rwanda,
mm-hmm.
which is not allowed. Actually, in the laws of UN, you cannot put a camp near the country of where people are just moving from.
Mm.
You better put them far to avoid the conflict. Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
But the governments of Congo put their camps near the border.
Mm.
You know what happened? The government who took place in Rwanda claimed to the UN to see what is going on and then solve the problem.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, if you are not solving the problem, as long as you're being affected, we are going to solve it by ourselves.
Yeah.
So the UN just take it as if they don't care.
Ignored. Yeah.
So they ignored, of course. The government who took place in Rwanda decided to go solve the problems by themselves. When are they going to solve? They go to remove the president of Congo, Mobutu Sese Seko.
Mm-hmm.
He got removed from the office by. Let me say that is truth. Of course, politically, you don't have to go by your own as if it is a country of Rwanda who's going to fight for Congo.
Yeah.
Something. Sometimes you find the reason why, and then you go in a kind of undercover in other name.
Mm-hmm.
There was an opposition of Congo at that time, who were living in Tanzania.
Okay,
so they went to look for him.
Mm-hmm.
Tell him that they're able to put him in office in Congo,
mm-hmm.
but they're going to go there in his name, like to be undercover of him. Okay,
mm.
So they went they said it is this guy he used to be called Laurent Désiré Kabila.
Mm-hmm.
Hmm? So Désiré Kabila was in opposition, an opposition leader of the government of Congo.
Mm-hmm.
He was not even able to get to power because he was not really related to with the fighters, with the soldiers, but the government of Rwanda, even the government of Uganda, both
mm-hmm.
have supported him
because
mm-hmm. he was living in Tanzania as a migrant.
Mm-hmm.
So they fight in his name, removed Mobutu Sese Seko
mm-hmm.
and put Mr. Kabila in the office.
Yeah.
But their target was there to bring back Rwandans who used to live here, who went in Congo,
mm-hmm.
all of them to bring them back, and that happened, of course.
Mm-hmm.
Most of the people came back at that time,
mm-hmm.
not 100%, but most of them have came. Okay, so conflict started like in that time, 94, 95, 96, yeah, like that.
Mm-hmm.
So, of course, they were supported by Rwanda at that time.
Yeah,
and how? Those Tutsis who used to live in Congo, they did not live peacefully
mm-hmm.
from that time, because those Hutus who went there from Rwanda used to keep being there, of course.
Mm.
Rwanda went there, but they did not actually remove everyone from there. You get used to live there, and then a conflict started by that time.
Yeah.
You know what happened? Those two Tutsis from here choose actually to fight for themselves, not always move out. Mm-hmm. They said, yo, we have actually to create our own soldiers and then start to fight for our life. Mm-hmm. They start to fight for our rights, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And when they started fighting now,
mm-hmm.
they keep saying, Rwanda, it is Rwanda. They kept saying it is Rwanda. Why these people used to live here as a Congolese?
Yeah,
they choose to fight for themselves.
Yeah,
to fight for their rights.
They say
and when they are fighting, while as I told you before, they speak in Rwanda.
Yeah,
as I told you, there is already speaking in Rwanda. Okay,
uh-huh, uh-huh.
So they keep speaking in Rwanda. Uh-huh. When they speak in Rwanda, the government of Kinshasa keeps saying they are Rwandans who are just coming to fight. Uh-huh. Why there are people from here? Yeah. Who speak in Rwanda?
Yeah.
As I explained to you before.
Yeah.
Hmm?
Yeah.
They say they are Rwandans who are just coming to fight with Congo. Yeah. And of course, they call the big nations, mm. that Rwanda is just coming to fight with them.
Mm-hmm.
So at that time, maybe those big nations, because they know what they're going to gain from Congo, because Congo is a rich country.
Lots of resources.
Yeah. With different resources, of course, mm. natural resources.
Mm.
So maybe they could listen to them. Just to take it to the resources.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why they choose to sanction Rwanda and different stuffs
mm.
by saying Rwanda is not safe. Like something to give bad image to the country.
Mm.
But as long as you live in Rwanda, you know how, like, you can at least see by yourself how Rwanda is. You
yeah,
get?
Yeah.
But all those stuffs to sanction Rwanda, to say Rwanda is just in Congo to fight for subsidy, blah, 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 like that, it is because those who are fighting, they speak in Rwanda,
yeah.
but they are Congolese, as the history of dividing the country did it.
Yeah.
They are Congolese.
Yeah.
Can you imagine? They didn't divide to Congo.
Mm-hmm.
Uganda has those who speak in Rwanda. Tanzania have them,
mm-hmm.
but they live peacefully.
Mm-hmm.
These ones used to live peacefully before those who did genocide in Rwanda go there.
Mm-hmm.
They used to live peacefully, like how Tanzania are, how Ugandans are.
Mm-hmm.
Those used to live peacefully. Mm-hmm. It has changed when those genociders from Rwanda went there. You get?
Mm-hmm.
Hey. Okay. It all changed from that moment.
I understand.
Yeah, man. That's how it is.
Yeah.
Maybe you're going to pay me more because I gave you something.
Yeah, no, that's a good
yeah,
something I didn't know.
You didn't know this?
No.
But at least you know something.
Yeah, no.
Man, go there and then explain to others.
Yeah,
talk to others to show them the truth here.
Yeah.
But the problem is that when people even are explaining it, people from Rwanda,
yeah.
most of them speak a local language.
Yeah.
They explain to Rwandans, we Rwandans know.
Mm.
But if you, like, Rwandans are, like, as I said, Rwandans are, like, maybe they could fight for social media,
mm.
but we are not on, like, we are a platform
mm.
to explain that.
Mm-hmm.
And even though it is a truth that people know, they do not actually spread it because Congo are just approaching others, of course, bringing something to give to them. Maybe they should say what Congo needs to talk out.
Mm-hmm.
But the truth is that for real.
Mm.
Yeah. It all started with the colonies. Even our president, when saying it,
mm-hmm.
he always say it is the root cause of colonies, how they divided the country. And if they divide the country, they need to know how they're going to treat those people to live peacefully.
Yeah.
That's how it is.
Yeah. That's crazy. It's crazy that it's still happening today, like this.
Yeah, people should know this. But
conflicts.
Day by day, they should know.
Yeah,
man.
Now, Elijah, thank you for your time.
Pleasure, man. I think
people of Namibia will appreciate all the really? Knowledge you gave us.
You show me feedback.
Yeah, I will.
Yeah, show me feedback.
Lipurane ngeno wapumbwa Eva tere ulikoni maundu tuto ingida ashike kapeno nwe utete okoye ekukurile. Oshafa fana nongeshe faili mehola mo iho etike kovano ile koshiwana. Onongeshe faa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano. Okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi tota njuka. Okukwetira oipindi konu kwa ndado inawa. Nune uto otukwetira o special angeta shake ngeshe faa omarudi dayo loka. Okone ushendi fenawa nukumona oijabo ili nawa. Ninge fata fano na Monica ko Eagle FM. Onora etatimwe bali heali nola natu. Heari bali no heari ileko derewa mura hetatu natu bali o hetatu matatu o mafilane egeleto the eye.
Alright, tell me, give us your thoughts on the performance of Team Namibia at these championships.
The performance was above board. I would like to say that above board. both the coach and I are pretty much satisfied. Two of our riders finished the race, and that's Roger and Dalcia. And then we had Marie with a technical. Obviously, she was pulled because we had two technicals they pulled off the race. Marco Thiel had a crash, and then he had to get off also. But then, generally, I would like to say that this is a phenomenal experience for the team. It's a world, I mean, you can't get any better. At the Worlds, complete your race at the Worlds. Little bit of bad luck, the others didn't finish, not excuses, but I mean, it's just tough luck on our side. Mm-hmm. But we'd like to say thank you to the sponsors and obviously the Federation and the team for always supporting the development of sports. What we'd like to do is elevate these kids and they're opening doors for other kids. The juniors, of course, we'd like to get to an elite stage. It's a gradual process, but we are getting there. Obviously, me being here, I think the UCI World Congress is a platform where you can network and remain relevant and put Namibia on the map. Obviously, telling the people what you think should be done to improve cycling in Africa. But that said, the recently women's tour that held, feedback that we got is phenomenal. We're just going to go upwards from here and going to work in collaboration with the government and the corporates in Namibia, and also the people that we've met here in the country that we've met to try and collaborate and see how to assist the sport coach all cycling.
Mm-hmm. And speaking of the Congress and just the experience overall, what's maybe one of your biggest takeaways or something that you learned that you want to take back to Namibia?
Well, first of all, I would like to congratulate Rwanda for hosting such an amazing event. Having the world in Africa for the first time is phenomenal. It's huge. And what we really need to learn is we need to improve and keep our country clean, not because it's not clean, but the level of cleanliness here would be an understatement if I say it's clean, it's immaculate.
Mm-hmm.
What I took from the Congress is that it's well organized. I attended my first Congress that had to do with cycling in Egypt at the Confederation of African Cycling called Elective Congress, but this one is just at another level. I mean, this is the world and you're every country that every cycling nation at that, and the comments and the takeaways there is that we need to do better, and people also want the UCI to give more support to African countries. Obviously they're also taking it step by step in growing the sport. The sport was started in Europe, but now it's a drop down effect going into Africa.
Mm-hmm.
And what we want to do as the Southern African countries is that we want to push the cycling we want to push cycling in Africa, and that's basically what we want to do. And we've started, it's baby steps, having the first ever UCI Women's Tour on the calendar. The UCI calendar was a big feat, and what the UCI president said, or the comments that he gave, is that definitely they're going to come back and give us more support. There was a gravel champs that we also had. It was a UCI calendar event. It was a top event, and we're sure that we've probably attracted more countries that will come next year, provided that we stage this this event.
Marie, talk us through what happened in the race today.
I don't know what to say. It's a tough pill, this one, but I guess we move on. Next is another chance.
Mm-hmm. And you know, the course was very challenging physically.
Yeah, I actually felt good. Mechanical. A girl from South Africa also had a mechanical, and then Yeah, from Leon, the race, because they're too fast, you can't catch them.
Mm-hmm.
You have to stay with them. If you once lose them, you lose them.
Mm-hmm. For the rest of your career, how do you think this experience helped your development in cycling?
I think it's going to help me grow mentally, mm-hmm. get stronger, and I'm just going to work hard for next year.
Monique, obviously, you were fighting through a lot of injuries this championship. Tell us, how was your overall experience?
Yeah, it was quite sad. I was really looking forward to this one because it was my last one under 23, and it was also the first one in Africa. And yeah, I was really looking forward to the race, but yeah, these things happen. I was just happy I could be it.
Speaking of supporting your team, your thoughts on Delcia completing the tough course today?
Yeah, I'm really proud of her for finishing. It's really, to finish here is just a big accomplishment. So yeah, they're going to do well in the future.
Marie, talk us through what happened in the race today.
I don't know what to say. It's a tough pill to swallow, but I guess we move on. Next is another chance.
Mm-hmm. And you know, the course was very challenging physically.
Yeah, I actually felt good. And then, I don't know, mechanical. A girl from South Africa also had a mechanical, and then. Yeah, from Leon, the race, because they're too fast, you can't catch them.
Mm-hmm.
You have to stay with them. If you once lose them, you lose them.
Mm-hmm. For the rest of your career, how do you think this experience helped your development in cycling?
I think it's going to help me grow mentally, mm-hmm. get stronger, and I'm just going to work hard for next year.
Monique, obviously, you were fighting through a lot of injuries this championship. Tell us, how was your overall experience?
Yeah, it was quite sad. I was really looking forward to this one because it was my last one under 23, and it was also the first one in Africa. And yeah, I was really looking forward to the race, but yeah, these things happen. I was just happy I could be it.
Speaking of supporting your team, your thoughts on Delcia completing the tough course today?
Yeah, I'm really proud of her for finishing. It's really, to finish here is just a big accomplishment. So yeah, they're going to do well in the future.
Roger, great ride yesterday. Talk us through how it was on the course then.
Also, the course was awesome. It was a two-party climb, and virtually the rest of it was downhill. So, yeah, it was a course that suited me better than other courses. So, that was a good thing. And, yeah, it's still tough with the punch and all of that. But yeah.
Mm-hmm. Physically, how difficult was the ride yesterday?
10 out of 10.
Yeah.
Yeah, I held on until end of lap 6, and yeah, then I dropped, which after that it was super difficult. And yeah, I also took with Hans, my coach, and yeah, I might have lacked a few long rides in the last few weeks, but the focus was on mountain bike world champs for the XCO, so yeah, with all that and traveling and so on, it was very difficult to do long rides, so. But yeah, it's an awesome ride.
Now, you're one of the few Africans that actually finished the race yesterday. How does that make you feel?
Yeah, so for me, I'm super happy. I mean, last year, there wasn't even a question of going to Road Bulls because, yeah, it's just so difficult to finish. And this year, I finished, and yeah, it's actually a super, super good result. And, yeah.
Right, Delcia, you just completed that tough, tough course. Tell us how it was out there.
It was such a hard race. I think definitely one of my hardest races I've ever done. Yeah, the goal was basically to stick to the bunch as long as possible. I knew I was going to get dropped, but it was just like literally just a matter of time. And then the first lap was so hard. I mean, like focusing to not tap wheels with each other and not hook your handlebar with someone.
Mm-hmm.
And then on top of that, to try and stay in the bunch. I think that was like a lot of stress.
Mm-hmm.
So like it's literally like you close your eyes for 1 second and you're at the back of the bunch. You need to work your way to the front again. So yeah, there, like on the first lap, my goal was basically just to stick as far as possible to the front. And then going up that first Kigali Golf Club, that was super hard.
Mm-hmm.
So I just went around the left to try and make up as many spots as possible. And that actually worked for me. And then, yeah, on the cobble climb, I just totally dropped. But then when I dropped, I was like, okay, I just need to keep my pace. And then I saw Megan from South Africa. She just completely stopped and bombed, and I felt so sorry for her. And then I was like, okay, I just literally just need to keep my pace. Hopefully, try and get a bunch to work with.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was on my own, and then there was a girl from, I think, Slovenia in front of me. Yes, and I tried to catch her, but it was like a Ricky effect. It's like you're there, but you're not there. And then on the third lap, I actually managed to catch her and drop her on the cobble climb. So that also like gave me a lot of motivation. And then lap four, I started cramping so badly. And I was like, flip, I'm not going to finish. Like these cramps are so bad. Like it was literally my upper leg. Like it feels like they pull into a little ball. And it's like you can't flip and pedal at all. And then I got some electrolytes from the farm. Super thankful for that. And then, yeah, literally, my goal for the fourth lap was just to finish as hard as possible. And then when I crossed that finish line, I was like, well, I know I need still have two big climbs ahead of me, but I'm basically done now. So it was literally just a matter of finishing. And, yeah, I mean, it's such a great feeling. And, yeah.
Obviously, physically, as you said, it was very difficult. Can you touch on how difficult this was mentally?
So mentally, I think, like with XCO World Champs, I wasn't prepared mentally as well as I was for this race. I think, and the thing is, we also focus more on XCO World Champs. So physically, I wasn't really prepared for this. So yeah, mainly I was a lot stronger than I was physically, I think, today. And I actually have on my top tube, you'll never lose until you quit trying, and this is tough, but so am I. And every time I started to suffer, I just thought about it, and I thought about my parents, and yeah, like, it was just everyone in my corner.
Awesome.
Thank you.
Congratulations.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of failure.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not a fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person who does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura menace.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past.
Mm.
And it's not something Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn. Our handle is Eagle FM Namibia.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Yeah, the race was really tough. It's quite hard to stay at the front with such high competition. And this course, you kind of need to be at the front the whole day. Otherwise, you're just riding way too hard at the back, accelerating up the climbs. So yeah, I lasted till about halfway, and then I just had nothing left in the tank. Just rolled in, and yeah, unfortunately, got a DNF.
Now, tell us the hills have become very famous. How tough was it to conquer those hills today?
Yeah, those hills are insane. The golf course climb is crazy steep, and then that cobbled climb just wears you down. That it's crazy.
Now, first world championship in Africa. How does it feel to compete in a world championship in Africa as an African?
It's unreal. It was my first world champs. His first 1922 world champs as well. And I mean, they hosted it so amazingly, and the crowds were phenomenal all the way around the circuit. Even in forced practice, it was ridiculous, and it just helps to have people screaming ESA and go from the side the whole way up. Even after I was dropped, it was unreal.
Now, lastly, record number of African participants.
How do you guys foresee this helping develop African cycling?
I think it's definitely going to help grow African cycling. It just exposes them to the level that all the other Europeans are racing at. And yeah, it shows us what we need to do in the future.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, having it here in Africa obviously means we can have a lot more African starters. And I think it just puts a whole lot more African riders in the time shift. It means if we've got some Africans that have some good days, we're definitely going to be seen on TV a lot more, along with the European riders that are seen all the time on European cycling. And I mean, just to expose them to the level like this and us to the level like this, it's so vital for the development of African cycling. And I think it's going to take a step forward. And in the next few years, we're going to see a lot more African riders going into pro teams.
Thank you. Cool. Okay, Ibrahim, thanks for joining us. Tell us, how has the championship been for you so far?
So, the championship has been amazing overall. So, so happy and so proud to see this kind of events happening in Africa, in Kigali today. And the championship, since the start, I believe everybody has been enjoying the moment. The people in the community are just super amazing, so supportive, and they cheer like everyone. They don't mind if you are like from Europe, maybe from Africa. They support everyone. So overall, the competition has been so amazing.
And as an African, how does it feel to have this competition here for the first time?
The feeling is super incredible to have this opportunity here, and we are so happy to have this. And I believe this is like a complete treat from the UCI to bring this competition down here. And as I'm talking to you here, if this competition is not from here, maybe I might not be able to make it, because it's Africa. I don't need to struggle a lot like finding visa to get to this place. I just like book my ticket, come to this place, then I compete.
Now, what got you into cycling?
Something beautiful about cycling that brought me into it is like, when you do cycling, you realize like your mental full body will be like fully active. And I started cycling when I was going to school, and later I noticed like, okay, it's time to do something out of this, not by just riding from home to school, school to home. So cycling is just like the overall thing that helps you build your mental health and your physical health.
Rwanda is such a nice city, and especially Kigali being its capital city, and I really enjoy staying in there.
Unfortunately, you had a crash. How was the race
overall? Yeah, as compared to Ghana, this race is very, very tough, especially the world champs, because the junior, the pressure they are using is not easy. I think I need to go home and train more and come back again next year. Yeah.
As an African rider, how was it to ride in the World Championship in Africa?
Yeah, I'm very, very happy and excited, because I think this is my first time being in the World Champs. And I think in Ghana, I've been the first junior to be in the World Champs. And I think I'm really, really grateful. Yeah.
So lastly, talk to us about, you know, like you said, the skill level here is very high. What do you think needs to happen for our African cyclists to catch up to the
rest? Sure, I think African cyclists, what we need now is mostly our equipment, because I think these guys, the equipment they are using is very, very, very intensive, because the equipment is ahead of us, plenty. And I think when we get the equipment, I think from there we can take off. Yeah.
Now, what do you have to say to your fans back home?
Yeah, I really, really appreciate their support and prayers that they have backed me. And I really, really, I came here with the intention to bring a medal home, but unfortunately, I couldn't. They should keep on hoping me that one day I'll bring the medal from the world to the house.
You are now tuned in to the Eagle Sports Zone.